we do have some language that might make them more comfortable. I was not able to clear it with the council until just earlier today, so unfortunately we don't have it in a written format. If you're comfortable, Madam Chair, we could make an oral amendment. I think it is something that would ease some of the concerns that the trial lawyers have on this particular portion.
And are you speaking to what section of the bill?
It's Section 15. The language in particular of Section 15 that I think that's caused some concern starts on the bottom of page 21 and goes to the top of page 22. The concern that was expressed, Madam Chair and members, was who would this civil contempt proceeding be against? Because the language talks in terms of the religious sect. Well, obviously the sect could be quite a large group of individuals, and I don't really think that the court would want to try to institute civil contempt proceedings against a number of individuals. So a proposal that we came up with that I think is acceptable to everyone would be to add language that clarifies that the civil contempt proceedings would be only against the authorized representative of the religious sect who has submitted the affidavit that's referenced earlier in the language.
All right. Representative Johnson, is this an oral amendment that you want to put before the committee at this time, or what's your pleasure?
I could do that if that's acceptable to you, or I could do it in Ways and Means, whichever you prefer.
How lengthy is the amendment?
It's less than a sentence.
I think the committee can handle it. Why don't you...
All right. On page 22, line 1, and I'll give you a copy of this as well, after the word proceedings, insert the following: against the authorized representative of the religious sect who submitted an affidavit described in paragraph paren A, comma, clause paren 3 or paren 4. And Madam Chair, I can bring this up to you if that would help.
I think that would be great. And members, the purpose of that amendment then would be to reflect the intention of the author and the department that there be some individual as opposed to an entire sect for the action. Are there any questions on that amendment? None. Then I'll renew my motion that page 22, line 1, be amended. After the word proceedings, insert against the authorized representative of the religious sect who submitted an affidavit described in paragraph A, comma, clause 3 or 4, comma. Any additional questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. Are there any other sections of the bill that you'd like to discuss with the committee?
Madam Chair, I suppose I could touch on the section that I think you might hear some testimony in opposition to. If you'd like, I can do that first.
That would be fine.
I believe that there is some concern about page 26, section 21, in particular, beginning on line 35 of page 26. And the use in that language of the expedited rulemaking process.
Right. And Ms. Hargarden, if you would explain to the committee what this section of the bill is trying to accomplish and your reasons for implementing it in this manner.
Madam Chair, members, what we're trying to accomplish here is to be able to amend our treatment parameters in a quick and efficient method, but certainly not without public input. In the workers' compensation system, there is a whole set of rules of treatment parameters that outline the appropriate type of treatment and amount of treatment that should be given to injured workers for certain injuries. What we're trying to do here is be able to amend these treatment parameters, update them, add new parameters as technology changes or as medical practice changes, and we'd like to do it in an expedited manner. However, if you look at the top of page 27, line 1, the only time that we would be able to use this expedited procedure would be if the changes had been recommended by the Medical Services Review Board. The Medical Services Review Board is an advisory board to the agency. and they serve an important role in helping us with the medical policy aspects involved in workers' comp. The board is made up of representatives of business, labor, as physician members, chiropractic members, physical therapist member, hospital administrator member, registered nurse member. So there's a broad array of members on this group that provide important services to individuals in the workers' compensation system. So we would not be able to use the expedited process until the Medical Services Review Board has recommended the changes that we would like to make to the treatment parameters.
All right, thank you. And then is there a public process associated with this Medical Services Review Board?
Madam Chair, yes, all meetings are open to the public. The meeting dates and minutes, and we can also put the agenda on our website. The open meeting laws apply to these groups, so it is a public process.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions on this section or any others that have been brought forward so far? Is there anything that you'd like to add, Representative Johnson?
No, Madam Chair.
Is there any additional areas of the bill that you'd like to discuss with the committee before we take opposition testimony?
Nothing in particular, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's move to opposition testimony. Then we have Mr. Joel Carlson, representing the Minnesota Trial Lawyers Association. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members. Joel Carlson, I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Trial Lawyers Association with some concerns about the language in House File 2915 as it's currently presented to the committee. I do think that the bill is subject to review and amendment and oversight by the legislature. I don't think that that simply exercising your right as legislators to amend a piece of legislation that affects the substantive rights of every worker or provider within a comp system necessarily has to crater the bill. So I do think that you have every right to look at the concerns that people bring to the committee and take action on them if appropriate. Taking that argument that it can't be amended to its logical extension, if the Comp Advisory Committee brought you a bill that said they were going to abolish the comp system, you could vote up or down, and that's it. And if that's the intention, that's fine. But I think that you have every right to look at the policies that are presented to you, and so several of them in the bill we think are problematic. Starting with Section 2, which wasn't addressed in the presentation, they define for the first time a specific personal injury as it relates to an intentional injection of a vaccine as a result of a public health, what I'll call a public health emergency. It's our belief that these are already, should you be injured in such a circumstance, these are already work comp-related injuries. I think to just ask yourself, if it isn't a work comp-related injury, what is it? There would be no remedy if it was not a comp-related injury. And we think that adding that definition in that section has the potential to lead to a number of problems, including we think that by stating this as a specific personal injury, you have the potential to implicate the Americans with Disabilities Act, unemployment benefits, the Patriot Act, which requires the immunization in the first place, and potential third-party claims, and all of which are, we think, well-settled issues. And adding this for the first time, a definition of a personal injury, we think raises more questions than it would ever seek to address. At least since 1959, in a case of Lange versus the St. Paul Airport Authority, it's so old it was before the MAC was even created, all workplace conditions have been adjudicated, or injuries have been adjudicated by our Supreme Court to be covered by the comp system and nothing else. Adding this language, we think, creates a confusion that's unnecessary, and don't believe that it's needed in the bill. We're not trying to do any harm to the Nurses Association that has brought this issue forward, but I don't think that in that advisory setting they were looking at the impact of this on other employment-related issues. And if you refuse to take the vaccine, and now this is considered a specific requirement of the COMP Act, you may have just unintentionally, and you quit because of it, you may have just unintentionally lost your right to unemployment benefits as a constructive discharge. If you have a disability that prevents you from taking a smallpox vaccine, for example, the employer has to make a reasonable accommodation to address you, all of which could be implicated by adding this language in here with no good purpose that we can determine. They did take care of, moving on, Madam Chair and members, on Section 15, they did take care of one of the concerns I have about who would actually be held in contempt under this new section, and that's not necessarily discussing the policy of whether or not you want certain employers to be allowed to go without workers' compensation coverage. But they did take care of the question about who would be held in contempt. They didn't. We haven't addressed yet how you would purge yourself of the contempt, and that is a specific requirement of civil contempt proceedings. And we don't think that this addresses that issue. We've identified who would be held in contempt now, but what do they have to do to purge themselves of the contempt? Without it, I don't think the court would have any direction. And civil contempt is enforced through incarceration, so you're talking about taking away this particular administrator's liberties and incarcerating him, but you don't tell him what he would have to do to purge himself of the contempt. And lastly, Madam Chair and members, on Section 21, on page 26, this section does allow the commissioner to develop through an expedited and non-public process all of the treatment parameters and payment schedules for injured workers and providers within the COMP system. And I am unaware of any other area in law where this expedited process has been used, where it's had the potential to impact so many people. The APA is designed to do, among other things, provide oversight of administrative agencies. It's designed to increase public accountability, increase public participation in the formulation of administrative rules, and to simplify the judicial review of administrative rules. This provision runs counter to all of that, the very intention of the Administrative Procedures Act, and we think without any justification or sound public policy. What we've suggested to the House Judiciary Policy Committee, and we'll suggest to you here, is that if you're going to allow this expedited process to be used, at a minimum, it should at least use the process contained in Chapter 14.389, Subdivision 5, which indicates that if a agency promulgates a rule and 100 people request a public hearing on that rule because they're concerned about what is published in it, the department would then have to hold a public hearing and be subject to the balance of the Administrative Procedures Act. You're talking about the benefits and reimbursements and care for everyone in the workers' compensation system, and to do that without a public process, you even take the legislative oversight of rules out of the process with that expedited process, because the legislature is supposed to get notified of promulgated rules, and they are exempt from even that in this process. We can see no good reason why they shouldn't have a public process on this, and if you amend the bill to allow for even the potential of a public process, if 100 people request a hearing, if that sunshine somehow causes everyone to run away from the bill, I think that that confirms some of the paranoia that may be there among the providers and injured workers. I assure you that this was not discussed in an open process and at the Work Comp Advisory. I talked to people who were at that meeting, and they simply came back and said, we'll get the bill drafted after a private meeting. We'll get the bill drafted and let you know how it goes. So no one had a chance to comment on that provision in any kind of public way. The last point on that, Madam Chair and members, Medical Service Review Board provides little comfort to me, and I don't think would provide much comfort to you. That is a full and complete functionary of the commissioner. The members are appointed specifically by the Commissioner of Labor and Industry and serve at his discretion. At one point, I don't think too many years ago, that review board was disbanded because it was only being utilized as a clearinghouse for what the commissioner's promulgated rules were. And so that doesn't give us any particular comfort that the MSRB would have to adopt these or agree with this process, because that is just a function of the commissioner, and it's only his appointments. With that, Madam Chair and members, I'd be happy to answer any questions. There was an amendment, I believe, that came to the committee, which I think has a that I just saw from the reviser, the AO4 1286 amendment, and I think as drafted, it has an infirmity. And I think what it needs to say is, after insert, including 14.389 subdivision 5. With that,
any questions for Mr. Carlson?
One for
Representative Whitman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, Ms. McKnight, if the subdivision 5 reference is included, the effect of the amendment would be to oblige 100 people to request a hearing instead of the ordinary 25. Have I got that correct?
Ms. McKnight.
Madam Chair and Representative Whitman, yes, if 100 or more people request a hearing, there will be hearings.
Representative Whitman.
Madam Chairman, Mr. Carlson, forgive me for arriving late, but I'm just wondering, is there a reason for bumping up the ordinary bar from 25 requesters for a hearing to 100 in this circumstance?
Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chairman and Representative Lippman, absolutely. The reason that number is in there, it's been that section of law only came into being in 1997, is that the expedited process was intended for specifically non-controversial rules that agencies would seek to implement. If a non-controversial rule engendered four times the amount of controversy that the regular rulemaking process engendered, then they would hold a public hearing. And so it was intended, specifically the expedited process was intended to address those types of issues that were non-controversial in nature and not likely to engender much controversy. And if they did generate that controversy, that's why the 100 was in there. If you don't include the amendment as it relates to subdivision 5, that becomes optional for the agency. The legislature has to specifically put that subdivision 5 in there. Madam Chair, a law authorizing or requiring rules to be adopted under this section, which is 14.389, may refer specifically to this subdivision. If the law contains a specific reference to this subdivision as opposed to general reference to this section, then you have to give the notice, and if more than 100 people request a hearing, it must be held in the manner pursuant to the regular rulemaking process. That was because this process was never intended for this type of controversial issue that would impact so many people.
Thank you. Are there any additional questions for Mr. Carlson? Thank you, Mr. Carlson. The next person I have on my list is David Coons from the Minnesota Chiropractic Association. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Yes. Thank you. My name is David Coons. I'm Government Relations Director for the Minnesota Chiropractic Association. I'm here today just to raise a couple issues that have concerns of us in the bill. We're all aware of the problems that the legislature had on benefits issues in the 70s and 80s and so forth. And in the 90s, we had agreement between labor and industry and the Republicans and the Democrats and the legislature that we would allow for the advisory committee to function and work to try and resolve issues related to the benefit sets and so forth. But in that agreement in the 90s and around 93 or 94, a fundamental part of that agreement was that both the Republicans and the Democrats stated that we could have the principles of managed care in the certified managed care plans, but the one thing that they all said was needed was that we would only have one fee schedule. And in this bill, we now have a proposal that allows managed care companies to negotiate fees with providers, and all the issues around reduced fees and managed care plans will affect the, we believe, the outcome of the quality of service, the timeliness of delivery of service, and ultimately affect the benefits. So we do not believe that that provision should be in the bill. The second area in the bill that we have problems with is this expedited rulemaking process. We believe very firmly that that is a legislator's responsibility to make the decisions of how these departments act and deal with issues. And if we believe that if that provision in the bill is allowed to stand, that there is no need for the commissioner in many cases to bring issues back to the legislature would be very difficult to do. So we don't believe that the expedited rule should be in this bill, and as a legislator, I think you probably want to have the oversight responsibility and for developing policy.
The third
area, and I'll finish quickly, is the area of best practices that the department has put in this bill. And best practices is type of a new concept that is being developed, but it's very controversial within the professions because the professions have not had a chance to establish what we mean by best practices and the criteria for best practices, and more importantly, who's deciding those best practices for each of the professions in the services we're providing. And yet that shows up in this bill. And so it's very vague what they're doing, but they don't say who's going to define, who's going to establish those, or any criteria for that. So if sections 21 were those two problems in section 21, the expedited rule and the best practice sections could be removed from the bill, we'd be happy. And on the managed care issue, again, the fee schedule, we were supposed to have one fee schedule. And now, and that's what the agreement was in 93. And now they've gone back and are trying to take that away, too. So,
all right. Thank you, Mr. Coons. Are there any questions for Mr. Coons? Thank you. Next person on my list is Judy Holly from the Minnesota Physical Therapy Association. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Holly. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Judy Holly, and I'm a physical therapist and the executive director of the Minnesota chapter of the American Physical Therapy Association. I come before you representing 1,500 of our members. You have a copy of my testimony, and I will just focus on Section 21 first, which is the backside of the page. We do appreciate the legislature taking a critical review of this bill. Our political system works well only when all the branches of government as well as the public are involved, and we think this bill has some issues relating to that. We have three issues with Section 21 of this bill. Repealing the language based on accepted medical standards for quality health care and replacing them with the words based on analysis of both medical evidence and accepted standards of medical practice may substantially reduce the level of health care that courts have determined must be provided to achieve maximum rehabilitation of the injured worker. We believe the current law has served us well for the last 70 years, and we have not seen a compelling reason nor a justification to change the law right now. We believe to change this law without some dedicated study is inappropriate and may cause unintended consequences. the second issue with this section is we're concerned about allowing MSRB and Department of Labor and Industry to do expedited rulemaking. We believe the physical therapy profession is not well served, well protected with this proposed language. We believe physical therapists should be integrally involved in revising standards and procedures related to physical therapy. Currently, the MSRB is made up of 15 members. There are 6 physicians, 2 chiropractors, 1 nurse, 1 physical therapist, 1 labor rep, 1 employer insurance rep, 1 hospital administrator, and only 1 public member, and then 1 designee of the Commissioner of Department of Labor and Industry. Though we do appreciate the voice that we have on MSRB, there is great potential for people outside of our profession to be making the decisions on what is good physical therapy care. We do not believe it's in the best interest of any profession that there is the potential for others to say what is the best practice of that profession. We believe Department of Labor and Industry and MSRB should work in conjunction with the appropriate professional association when developing language related to standards and procedures of that profession. Another issue we have with the expedited rulemaking is what has been stated previously, and I'll just echo that for the Department of Labor and Industry to have this ability to do this, why wouldn't other departments then want to go down this road? And it just takes the public totally out of the rulemaking process, and the rulemaking process is there for a reason, and we believe it should be held intact. We don't support the expedited rulemaking, and we also believe that just when you're looking at rulemaking, that the appropriate professional association who has a vested interest and probably has expertise in the area should be brought to the table and work in conjunction with MSRB when writing rules. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Holly?
Madam Chair.
Representative Swenson.
Thank you, and I guess I'd probably address this to Representative Johnson. We've heard concerns from a couple testifiers here about Section 21. Is there a special reason that these changes are being proposed in this bill? I guess I'd like to.
Sure. Madam Chair.
Reason for, no.
Representative Swenson, I'm not on the council, so I'm going to ask Ms. Hargarden, who attends these meetings, to explain the reason they have that in there.
Ms. Hargarden.
Madam Chair, Representative, I understand the legislature's general dislike for expedited rulemaking. I've been at the agency for a number of years, and I've been lucky enough to hear the debates over the years about rulemaking process. Some of the testimony you heard, I have to disagree with, because it's giving the impression that it's leaving the public out of the debate and the discussion, and that's not true at all. The whole point of the second portion of this sentence about using the MSRB and that we cannot use the expedited process until we've gone through the MSRB, that is the most appropriate place, I think, for some of these discussions and debates. You heard Ms. Holly just say that it was important that the associations being affected be at the table, and they are at the table. They're members of the MSRB. That group is made up of all of the major constituencies that have a stake in the workers' comp system, the health care providers, the employees, the employers, the hospital associations. That is a very appropriate group, I think, to have this intense debate, to work on these rules. And frankly, if the MSRB doesn't agree on something and they don't, by majority vote, believe that these changes to the treatment parameters should happen, then the expedited rulemaking process does not happen. It's going to need a majority vote of this public body in order to be able to allow the expedited rulemaking process. So one of the things that we're trying to do is not go through duplicative process, and we're trying to funnel this debate and discussion in front of the people that we think are the most appropriate people to hear it, all of those representatives of the people that participate in the system.
Representative Swenson, did you have a follow-up?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering, is there a problem with the present system that you're asking for changes? I mean, I'm just trying to understand this all.
Ms. Hargarten.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, some of the treatment parameters we have in work comp are over 10 years old. A lot has changed in medical practice, in technology, and in use of things over 10 years. To do the full-blown rulemaking process at once every 10 years doesn't really, I think, help injured workers. They should be able to have the best, most up-to-date treatment available that the medical community is using. And by utilizing the Medical Services Review Board and their expertise to help us do that on a quick and efficient yet informed basis, I think serves the injured workers very well.
Thank you, Representative Lippman. And we do have two additional people that would like to speak in opposition to this as well.
Well, this is for a question for Ms. Hagard. Hargarten. Thank you. Madam Chairman, Ms. Hargarten, very briefly. I'm looking at page 26, line 20, which suggests that the commissioner would consult the Medical Services Review Board, but it doesn't provide, at least that I can tell here, for the majority vote requirement that you alluded to in your reply to Representative Swenson. Is there another place that obliges a majority of the Medical Services Review Board?
Madam Chairman, Representative, the portion that I was talking about that indicated that we could not use the expedited process begins on line 35. It says that it may be used, the expedited process may be used, and if you go on to page 27, if the Medical Services Review Board has recommended the standards and procedures. And according to the board's procedures, the only recommendations come by way of a majority vote. And the other thing I wanted to add, Madam Chair, that I forgot to add previously, is the Medical Services Review Board is set out in statute. It was established by the legislature. It is true that the commissioner appoints through the General Secretary of State's open appointment process the members, but it is a statutory process.
Thank you. Representative Lippman.
Very briefly, Madam Chairman, Ms. Hargarten, what can you tell us about the adequacy of the public standards process that would be employed by the Medical Systems Review Board? Would you have notice and comment? Would you have a statement of need and reasonableness? Would you have an open hearing? If we're blotting out those processes on the grounds that it's a second parallel process, tell me about the process that the Medical Services Board will apply so that we can make the judgment about whether a follow-on rulemaking process is redundant or not.
Madam Chair, Representative, first of all, all meetings of the Medical Services Review Board are open to the public. It's posted on our website when they will meet. The minutes are posted on our website, and we'll be posting the agendas also. It's my understanding that 14.389, and I'm sorry I don't have it right in front of me, but that already has a notice procedure in it, a published notice procedure, and I believe it also has a review by the ALJ procedure already in 14.389.
Representative Lippman.
Well, just a comment, Madam Chair. I mean, what I think we're faced with under expedited process is that there would be a notice and comment procedure, which is they would have draft rules for written comment, and without the 1286 amendment, it would just be that. It would be based upon a paper record, and the administrative law judge would just review as to whether whatever was offered by the agency was within the statutory delegation. Doesn't mean it's a good idea, doesn't mean it's the only approach, doesn't mean it's well thought out. It's just within the broad parameters and the way that we write legislation, we give very broad delegations to the commissioner on these things. And I'm concerned that there wouldn't be an opportunity for public testimony or talking or clearly those rights if it's just in public view, as Ms. Hargarten suggested. I'm not sure that that's a real parallel to either expedited rulemaking with comments by the public or full-blown rulemaking. It doesn't seem to be a question of time. It's just a question of expense as to whether this other second process is worthwhile. And if giving members of the public a chance to talk and to suggest that it's beyond the delegation or a bad idea, I think that might well be helpful and useful.
All right, thank you. Some take the additional two testifiers that would like to speak in opposition. I have Twyla Brace. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. And I'm coming into this bill very late, having just seen it several hours ago and trying to sort of put my hands around it. But I guess in looking at the changes that I see, I would say that this is a very pro-managed care bill, a very pro-HMO bill, and and not necessarily a pro-patient bill. And I'm just going to point out a few things as to why that's sort of the overall viewpoint that I've come up with here. If you look on page 13, lines 2 to 7, here you have the employer being able to designate a pharmacy or network of pharmacies. It's permissive, indeed. Interestingly enough, it's not only prescription, but it's also non-prescription medications that your employer can designate a pharmacy for you to get. And when I look at this, I think, is this this is where the employer, given what's the other things which I'm going to comment on in this bill, it looks to me like these can be sort of the favored pharmacies, probably managed care pharmacies. And just the fact that we're going to tell employers where they can, we're going to tell employees where they can go and get their drugs and limit it, is also a slippery slope to tell them where they can go and get their doctor and limit that. And I think parts of the other bill, the rest of the bill also say that. On the same page, on line 20, the term treatment parameters. And I just noticed that term because it doesn't actually seem like on page 26, which is what it's referring to, that actually talks about treatment standards. Standards are different than parameters. I'm not sure why this word parameters in here, but parameters tend to make you think of a box in which you need to stay, as opposed to a more flexible standard that deals with the patient's age and their personal needs and their physiology and all that sort of stuff. Parameters tend to set more of a box around treatment, and so, you know, I would advise definitely changing that word so that we don't actually have that in, because I don't actually see it in the statute it's referring to. Then we go to page 15, lines 8 to 12, and I find this a little interesting, that the contract can establish fees that are different from the maximum fees. And my first question when I heard that was, so where's the money going? Because it doesn't seem here that the HMO is necessarily going to be paid anything less, but they're going to be able to pay the doctors and the physical therapists and everyone else less. So where's the savings going? So then I looked at page 14 at the very bottom. A certified managed care plan may offer peer review, utilization review, case management, and dispute resolutions as a separate optional component. So it occurs to me that not only might they be able to save or hold the savings as HMOs, but they also might be able to have this new thing that would be paid additionally to them. So it seems to me like there's a lot of money here that will be able to go to managed care organizations that won't necessarily even go to patient care. And then the last thing is page 26, what everyone else has been talking about, and line 25, an analysis of both medical evidence and accepted standards of medical practice. Well, first of all, the question to ask is whose evidence? And all we have to do to look at this very simply is to remember the research that said butter was bad and margarine was good. And then a little later, margarine was bad and butter was good. And it just depends on who does the research. So I find this to be a very troubling phrase, this analysis of medical evidence, because they get to choose the medical evidence. 30,000 pieces of research come out every year. And the Institute of Medicine has said that the evidence depends on who wrote the study, and the biases prevail. So that line, I think, should definitely be taken out of there. And then the last thing is an expedited rulemaking. I heard what Ms. Hargard said, or whatever her name was. But I don't think that this board, what's it called, the Medical Services Review Board, you know, even if they make a recommendation, that's not patients. And the public are the patients. And what we're talking about here are patients having an opportunity to know what's going on and make public comment and get only 25 people together to have a judge take a look at it. So I don't think there should be expedited rulemaking, especially because this is a pro-managed care bill, especially because this allows them to make decisions and limit treatments. And so as opposed to what she said, you know, they want to increase with technology and innovate and let that all get out there. It's also possible that what they'll do is ratchet down the care and the patients won't really have any power. So those are my comments.
All right, any questions for Ms. Briggs? Right, thank you very much. Mr. Wenmark. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bill Wenmark, President and Chief Executive Officer of NowCare Medical Centers, which is a statewide system of urgent care medical providers. We have about 29 physicians in our group, and we're the largest non-contracted, direct contracting work comp provider in the state of Minnesota, non-managed care. We directly contract with workers across the state. I too, want to suggest that I'm concerned, and I know there was a lengthy debate on the House floor today about best practices as well. And it seems in Section 21 we're going back and talking about the same thing all over again. And I was struck by what you can read almost every day. Butter and margarine was talked about. Well, here's a heart attack, death, and diabetes dropped sharply. And it talks about the fact that science has made dramatic steps. And we talk about even here best evidence suggests. And I heard earlier that there was some concern on the part of the department for the fact that there's not been an update on the procedures in 10 years, and technology has changed. Well, I can tell you as a representative of many providers, we don't wait for someone in the government to tell us that something's changed. We change it when we see that the evidence indicates that it's best for the patient. And I think the most important decision makers is not a panel of people or political appointees that are making those decisions, but in the specific office where we're treating those people, where we are evidencing so many different characteristics than you could possibly ever imagine you could look at or a committee could even consider because you're not looking at the patient. We were talking a little bit earlier with the physical therapy people a number of years ago in our case management work, and again, remembering that we are the largest direct contracting work comp provider in the state of Minnesota, many of our studies have indicated that only 23% of the actual costs of the work comp system are actually medical costs. 77% of the costs are wage replacement. And if you don't have an aggressive case management program going with your workers, and many of the workers and companies that we work with don't even or used to not know, but it's important to get the worker back to the work site. Don't let them go home. We have a rule in our medical practice, you either discharge to three places, the morgue, the hospital, or back to work. But we never discharge to home. That is not allowed by any of our providers. Because the evidence indicates that with case management and the physical therapy people, which we now have brought on site, we've discovered in our research that when the physician is working with a strained injury, which is largely the context in which much of the injuries are, there's certainly lacerations, there's other kinds of urgent care issues, but largely it's neck and back and strain injuries, carpal tunnel, so forth. We found that not having the physical therapy provider on site, evidence to us that there was a great deal of problem with the case management because we're sending the person for the physical portion of their care off-site. Many, many years ago, we brought that on-site, and now together, collegially, we manage that care. So you have the physical therapist and the doctor sitting there talking to the patient, and the patient can't do what we call malinger. And we know that within a four-week period of time, if we don't have that worker back to work, the chances of getting them back to work are hugely reduced. Hugely reduced. So I'm very concerned about Section 21 in the concept, even that you debated today on the House floor, that the state political system as it is, and many of you differ politically and otherwise, would now bring into the venue of this debate your care. And do think of it in that context. It could be someday you. But we deal with that every day. We make those changes on the fly with valuable research. And so I would suggest that really strongly look at whether you want to continue with the changes in number 21. And may I add one final comment, Madam Chair, and thank you for the time, and to Representative Johnson. I just want to say one other thing about what we've learned in the actual practice of taking care of people. On page 13, line 3, it's back to the pharmacy. Just give you an example of something that I would suggest is missing here. Earlier testimony talked about some other aspects of this, so I'll not talk about that. But, for instance, if it were me, I would suggest that on line 3 after pharmacies, you would insert or medical provider. Because, again, in the case management of these workers' comp and other kinds of people that present to us, we have an on-site pharmacy prepackaged, ready to go. We carry about 28 prepackaged pharmaceuticals, of which we can dispense at a rate somewhat 50% of what it actually costs to go to a pharmacy. And, by the way, that extra stop, which a lot of, in the case of treating our mothers with strep throats and their children, they like to get their liquid moxicillin right there at the clinic site and not have to stop at a pharmacy somewhere else. And I would suggest that in this particular case, we too provide a very cost-effective distribution system for those medications that a worker might need for treatment. And additionally, on line 6, after pharmacy again, or medical provider, because it provides us what we're doing today, the opportunity to help you control those costs and provide a reasonable access to that care by the employee. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Mr. Wenmar? Seeing none, thank you.
Yep.
Representative Johnson, a number of concerns were raised through the testimony. If you'd like to address those for the committee, in particular, one of the ones that I was curious about is the difference between the page 3 where you talk about treatment parameters versus medical standards on page 26, and then some discussion around the rulemaking process, which still seems to be a concern.
Madam Chair, I will ask Ms. Hargarten to address the difference in those two terms.
All right. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Hargarten.
Madam Chair, what we were trying to get at in the language on the bottom of page 26 and the top of page 27 regarding medical standards and procedures are our treatment parameters, being able to amend those. I don't have any particular concerns with making that change. I would like, Madam Chair, if you, I could consult with the leadership of the council before we make that change. That was our intent, was to try to get to change those treatment parameters.
All right, thank you. And then did you have any more comments relative to the expedited rule process and the referencing back to the public noticing or the...
Madam Chair, I certainly wouldn't be opposed to having some sort of publication of notice of the Medical Services Review Board meetings. The meetings would be open to the public. They'd be available to have testimony. That's part of the reason why it's made up of such a diverse group of individuals, is to try to get the input from all interested parties. One of the previous testifiers said that there's no voice on the Medical Services Review Board for patients, and that's not true. The patients are the employees. The employees are represented on the Medical Services Review Board. The other item that concerned me was the statement that medical costs for workers' comp only comprise, I think the figure is 20 or 30%, and that's incorrect. In the past couple of years, for the first time ever in workers' comp history in this state, the amount of benefits that we pay out in medical benefits is more than is paid out in wage loss benefits. And workers' compensation has been around since 1913. And it's just in the last couple of years we've seen medical benefits begin to completely overtake wage loss benefits. The Medical Services Review Board process is an open process. They have helped us tremendously in the original establishment of our medical treatment parameters. They spent many, many months, many, many meetings, much, much debate and much discussion. They're a valuable tool, and we certainly intend to use them as a means by which to get input from all interested parties. If the group as a whole, as a majority, cannot come to an agreement on changes, then the expedited process would not be used.
Thank you. Representative Swenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the witness and Representative Johnson, I've been told earlier today by some people talking to me that this bill is an agreement that's have been agreed to both by industry and labor organizations, and I see also that this is the fourth committee this has been before, and today we're hearing a lot of concerns from, you know, from various individuals or various groups. Have these concerns been brought up at the other committees, or has there been, and if so, have there been attempts to work with these people to or have discussions with them to try and come to some understanding? I mean, you know, it's probably difficult to vote on this when you're hearing all kinds of conflicting testimony, and you know, and what's right, or you know, it's. But I was just wondering, have these concerns been brought up at the other committees, and you tried to resolve something?
Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Swenson, most of these concerns have been brought up. The Health and Human Services, we talked about the pharmacy issues and a couple of the other things that have come up. And to a certain extent, we have tried to work through them. But this is kind of a unique bill. I've certainly never carried one like this before, where it comes from a process in which I have no control. That does not mean we don't have the right as a legislature or a committee to change it. I certainly don't want anyone to think that that's my argument at all. It may mean that we have to step back and look again as to whether we can move forward with the bill or not if that happens. But that's why we're here, is for you folks to look at that and see if you have grave concerns about any portion of it. I thought we did have a meeting with Joel Carlson a few days ago for, I don't know, a half hour, 45 minutes. I thought we had worked through everything except for the expedited rulemaking piece, which you know, I can understand people have differences of opinion on. I'm not on the council, so I haven't been at these meetings, but my guess is many of these same issues came up during council meetings and were discussed. I don't know if Ms. Hargarten recalls any of those or not, but certainly these have come up before.
Any additional questions? Representative Pugh.
Madam Chair, I know at one time there was a rule that House rule that required any bill that contained rulemaking process issues to go to GovOp. Does this bill have to go to government operations as well?
That generally has been the case.
Madam.
Okay, and I think the Representative Johnson has something to add to this.
You know, Madam Chair, Representative Pugh, I have seen that rule. I actually talked to Representative Rhodes this morning about that because our plan was to go to GovOps. He did not feel that there was a need to see it because we are likely going to put this into the jobs omnibus bill, and he did not think that rule applied if that is what we did.
Any additional questions? Representative Littman.
Madam Chairman, Representative Johnson, Ms. Hargarten, I'm trying to understand Section 21. So the commissioner, under current law, established standards and procedures for healthcare provider treatment. Can you tell me about those standards and procedures for healthcare, what the commissioner does currently without passage of House File 2915?
Madam Chair,
Ms. Hargarten,
Representative, we refer to them as treatment parameters, and they've been in the law for a number of years. They've been in the rule for a number of years. The process that we went through many years ago to establish those parameters was in conjunction with the Medical Services Review Board. There was an extensive debate, extensive discussion, a whole rulemaking record, the whole nine yards. We have not updated the treatment parameters in, I believe, 10 years. So the language that you see there about adopting rules and establishing standards and procedures, we haven't utilized that for some time. There's a number of changes that we think need to be made. Obviously, things have changed in 10 years. We just would still like to use the process that we use in establishing them in the first place with the Medical Services Review Board. We'd just like to do it in a more expedited manner.
Representative Littman.
Madam Chairman, Ms. Hargan, so I understand your testimony. Are you saying that the commissioner doesn't have the authority to update the existing treatment parameters without House File 2915? Is that what you're saying?
Ms. Hargarten.
Madam Chair, Representative, no, I'm sorry. That wasn't what I was indicating. We certainly do have the power to do that. We'd have to go through the full rulemaking process. We'd prefer to utilize the Medical Services Review Board to debate and discuss and to help us amend those treatment parameters, and we prefer to do it in a more expedited process after we've gone through that. But we certainly can go through the full rulemaking process. We just have not done it because of the time implications and the excessive cost implications involved in it.
Representative Littman.
Madam Chair, Ms. Hargett, a final question, I hope. Is there any danger, in your estimation, that the commissioner would adopt rules if House File 2915 were not enacted? Is there any danger that the commissioner would adopt new treatment parameters that weren't A, based on an analysis of medical evidence, or B, the standards of medical practice?
Ms. Hargarten.
Madam Chair, Representative Lippman, I don't know how rules that did not meet those criteria would ever get through the rulemaking process. I don't think it's possible.
Any additional questions? Representative Johnson, there was an amendment in our packet, the 1286, that Mr. Carlson referenced. Have you had an opportunity to review that amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I have.
Would you like to comment on that amendment?
Well, I can understand the debate, and my concern is that we make a significant change to this, and as I mentioned before, based upon the delicate political balance here, that may mean the end of the bill. I'm not going to say it will, because we have not gone back to the council to get their thoughts on that. My preference would be to keep the bill as it is.
All right, thank you. Mr. Wenmark is asked to provide comment regarding some comment that was made by the department. And then we're going to move on, members.
Yes, just briefly. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I just wanted to comment the department had just contradicted what I just said about 27% of the medical costs and 77% wage replacement. I'm sorry to differ with the department. That may be numbers they're looking at that maybe are auditing groups that are much more medically oriented than we are. I'm suggesting this is our private practice of medicine, and this is our groups that have evidenced this information. So notwithstanding the data that the department has is from all different providers, I'm talking about the specific private practice of medicine and our efforts to reduce the medical costs in the work comp system at a significant rate, to such degree that now it looks to us that the wage replacement is the largest issue, by the way, of which we will have some new data we've been addressing with the case management piece that I had mentioned earlier. So I just wanted to make a point. The department may have different data from some other providers that have a much more medically aggressive plan. We, again, do not medically aggressively go after them. We try to get them back to work. So I want to make that point. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, would any of you like to comment about the quandary we're in right here? My personal opinion is if this bill moves without any amendment or any changes, I'd be happy to vote no against it on the House floor, because I do think there are some problems that have been brought before the committee, and so I'm not quite sure, other members, if there's agreement or how you'd like to handle this, but it is 3:30 on Friday, so I'd like to get some resolution. Representative Pugh.
Madam Chair, I share your concerns with a number of items in the bill, but it seems like Section 21 is the target of most of the comments. The questions that Representative Lippman asked seem to me to say that life could go on just fine with the current law. Any new rules could be performed through the regular rulemaking process. It would be a little slower, cost more, but it could be done that way. I'm not sure that the Medical Services Review Board offers much comfort. It's one public hearing. It's certainly not the kind of scrutiny that the regular rulemaking process would require. The testimony was that any new rules will, in fact, be based upon medical evidence and accepted standards of medical practice. So that language is essentially unnecessary anyway. My preference would be just get rid of Section 21. We get rid of a major problem with the bill. And maybe in that respect it can go forward. It doesn't have to go to GovOps under any circumstance, and there might be a higher level of comfort with the bill.
And I think that that may be tempting. I think that what I've been told by leadership and various people that have worked on this is that there's different components of this bill that were put in a kind of a give-and-take process for a package plan, if you will, and that for us to just arbitrarily yank one section out of the bill is probably in essence just killing the bill altogether. And do we as a civil law committee want to do that, or do we want to move without recommendation to the floor and let the body fight it out? Or
Madam Chair, if I could just comment on what you said, Representative Pugh. Taking out Section 21, this is actually kind of refreshing because I haven't been to a committee yet where everybody seemed to agree what was wrong with the bill. Usually it's two people don't like this part, two people don't like that part, and that's the concern. This will solve a problem for some members, but other members will say, well, no, we can't vote for it because of 12 or 14 or 15, and so I'm not sure. Again, you have the right to do it, but I'm not sure that that necessarily will work to solve any problems.
Thank you. Representative Wardlow.
Madam Chair, I think this is definitely sausage in progress, and I'm still confused. I don't know who to believe. I agree with Representative Swenson. If it was on the floor, I'd vote no. If it's going to get that far, I'd vote no now, probably.
Representative Smith.
Well, Madam Chair, I was going to ask, do we have to wait until the floor? But looking at Amendment 1286, I will offer that amendment if Representative Pugh doesn't want, if he first wants to take Section 21 out, I'll wait, nod yes or no, Representative Pugh, or I will offer that amendment now.
Okay. Representative Smith, what we're going to do this time is we're going to take a 7-minute recess, or we'll be in recess until 3:45, and I want to have a conversation with the author of the bill. I'm recess.
So,
reconvene the civil law committee hearing, and Representative Johnson, as the author of the bill, is happy to accept the amendment, the A04-1286, as amended. So if you have your amendment in front of you, what we would insert is after the, after the third quotation and before the comma, insert including 14.389 period.
No.
It's for clarification purposes, drafting.
Isn't it supposed to be including subdivision 5? It actually should be later than that, Madam Chair. It should read page 26, line 36, after 14.389, insert, quote, comma, including subdivision 5. Is that right?
That, Representative Johnson, that's exactly as the bill or as the amendment was presented.
No.
I have a copy in my hand that after the third quotation on that on line 3, you would insert including 14.389 period.
Oh.
Mr. Carlson?
Madam Chair, it would say including 14.389 and then continue on subdivision 5. So if there's a period after the 9 on yours, that's only... that's not to end it. That's only...
That's correct. I did not delete subdivision 5.
Right. Then you got it exactly right.
Madam Chair, this is the language that I really always wanted in the bill. I just wasn't telling you that.
All right, members, so I'll move Amendment 1286 as amended. Any questions?
Huh?
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted. At this point, after some discussion, and a trip to the fourth floor, the author now tells me he wants the bill to go to rules. And I'm going to make a motion that House File 2915, as amended, be moved without recommendation to the Committee on Rules. Are there any questions on the motion? Any additional questions for the bill author?
No.
Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
No.
Motion is adopted.
Division.
Okay, those in favor, raise your hand. Those opposed, raise your hand.
I changed.
One, and then we're, those opposed, and we're having two abstentions today. Okay, we're going to try this again, gentlemen. All those in favor, raise your hand. Good job. All those opposed, raise your hand. Four. I believe that was a vote of 7-4.
Not before
all right.
Time.
Representative Johnson, the motion was adopted. I think it's very clear that there are elements of the bill that people are not very comfortable with. If you could take the message in the comments back to those that are interested in passing this bill, I would suggest that there's probably room for improvement.
More clear than ever,
before it's ready for prime time. And with that, seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Have a good weekend, guys.
Thank you.